Hello, thank you for attending 2020 Sunstone Digital Symposium Session 121 titled Mormon Bigfoot Searching for Something to Believe in. The audio from this session will be available for purchase at sunstone.org after the symposium. The video recording of this session will be available in the Whova app for approximately 3 months, beginning at the end of August 2020. At Sunstone, we are making it a goal to build a community that allows many ways for people to express their faith. Our tagline is, there is more than one way to Mormon. We invite you to help us build a community where all paths are given space to be better understood. Please support us in our mission by making a donation and subscribing at sunstone.org. About this presentation, when a post-Mormon finds out that a compelling Bigfoot documentary is actually a work of fiction, he must again deal with doubt. Soon after returning from his mission, Tom sat down on a curb in downtown Atlanta and wept over his lost faith. He's since made peace with his Mormonism and now views it as a beautiful metaphor, an agent for stability, and a tool for spiritual growth. Since leaving the church, he's gone on to study many other philosophies and faiths, eventually finding a beautiful amalgamation of his spiritual views in the quest to determine the truth behind the Bigfoot phenomenon, which interestingly enough, is led by an LDS professor in Idaho. I'll take a moment to introduce you to our speaker before we begin. Tom Bennett is a six-time Sunstone Symposium presenter. He is a traveling musician and student of life and the spiritual experience. I'll now give the floor to our presenters.
All right, let's see here. Thanks for the warm introduction. I appreciate that. As was just said, my name is Tom Bennett, and I'd like to welcome you all to this talk, Mormon Bigfoot, Something to Believe in. We're going to discuss all things Squatchy and how the Bigfoot phenomenon relates to Mormonism. Before we get too far, I do want to say, yes, I do believe in Bigfoot. But before you laugh, I want to remind you that most of you, at least at some point, believed in Kolob. And that's a pretty weird one too. So suspend your disbelief, please. Belief in Bigfoot, which is known by many names in many cultures, has been relegated to the fringe, much like Mormonism has been amongst the religions. There are countless stories of Bigfoot. They appear in Mormon culture and are seen throughout the United States, especially the West. Native American culture is rife with stories of the creatures. The most common name for the creature is Sasquatch. The name Sasquatch is an anglicized version of the Salish Native American word Sesquick from southwest British Columbia, where the majority of sightings of the creatures take place. In the native language, the word means wild or hairy man. Descriptions from ancient days until the modern time describe the creatures as being from 6 to 15 feet in height, with the majority of descriptions describing the creatures being around 8 feet tall. Most sightings describe the creatures as being bipedal, walking on two legs, and appearing very ape-like. Some sightings describe an extremely human-like face and describe the creatures as appearing more caveman-like. Descriptions of such a creature can be found throughout multitudes of Native American cultures, ranging from the Arctic all the way through Canada and the United States. Though the Sasquatch is considered a cryptid, or an animal which has not yet been scientifically validated, encounters with the creatures are found in many cultures around the world. In the Himalayas, it is known as the Yeti, which translates to man who lives like a bear. While being accepted by locals since time immemorial to be a living, breathing creature, the modern scientific world only began to listen when in 1951, world-famous mountaineer Eric Shipton documented some strange tracks that he found in Nepal. While these tracks have never been paired with any living creature, National Geographic and numerous other experts acknowledge that they are authentic tracks. CNN reported that as recently as 2019, the Indian Army released a statement that they too have found Yeti tracks in the region. Many other well-respected mountaineers have spoken of seeing the creature through the 19th and 20th centuries. Throughout Sumatra and Indonesia, there are tales of the orang pendek. It is a small, ground-dwelling bipedal primate that is known to inhabit the remote mountainous forests of the region. The native nomadic locals speak of sharing the forest with them for centuries. A Dutch settler, Mr. Van Heerwarden, gave a description in 1923 and describes the creatures as being not at all ape-like in the face. Australian Aborigines speak of the Yowie, generally understood to be a very similar creature to the American Sasquatch, in that it is large, ape-like, and reclusive. In China, the creature is known as Yeren and has been the motivation behind a massive military expedition. In 1980, China's Academy of Science sent three teams to research, looking for the mysterious creatures. Their search resulted in the finding of hair, excrement, footprints. This Chinese search resulted in the finding of hair, excrement, footprints, and a possible sleeping nest. Western Sasquatch hunters compared their findings with those of the Chinese teams and found great similarity in the footprint castings. Dr. Jeff Meldrum, professor of anthropology, specializing in early hominid bipedalism, once said to me, quote, "If there is not currently existing a great ape like the Sasquatch, it would be the only period in history where it was missing," end quote. Many who study the Sasquatch phenomenon scientifically will speak of the Gigantopithecus. The Gigantopithecus is an extinct ape from the Pleistocene era in southern China. Due to the size of fossilized mandibles and teeth, it is speculated. Many who study the Sasquatch phenomenon scientifically will speak of the Gigantopithecus. The Gigantopithecus is an extinct ape from the Pleistocene era in southern China. Due to the size of fossilized mandibles and the teeth, it is speculated that the Gigantopithecus would have ranged between 440 and 660 pounds. It possessed the largest molars of any known ape and was an herbivore in diet. Height estimates range up to 12 feet. Throughout the fossil record, many other ape-like hominids have been known to exist. Many anthropologists believe that the last 300,000 years is the only time that man has existed as the solitary hominid species. It is worth noting, however, that even in this period of lack of diversity amongst hominid species, we still share upwards of 98% of our DNA with existing great apes. We may be the sons and daughters of God in the spirit, but in the flesh, we are hairless apes. Among the countless cast footprints, hair, and scat samples, and an ever-increasing number of eyewitness accounts, perhaps the greatest evidence for Sasquatch is the 1967 Patterson-Gimlin footage. This footage is the source of what many think of when they picture a Bigfoot. In the footage, a large bipedal, man-like ape is seen walking across a creek bed, occasionally looking back at the filmmaker. It is the single most scrutinized piece of film in existence. If it is what it claims to be, it is evidence of the existence of Sasquatch, the most elusive animal on the planet. If it is not a Sasquatch, it is a well-orchestrated hoax. National Geographic sought to put the question to rest once and for all when they made their feature-length documentary, The Truth Behind Bigfoot. In the documentary, six different experts are hired to either debunk or validate the existence of Sasquatch based on the Patterson-Gimlin footage. Costume makers from Hollywood's famous Jim Henson Studio said that making such a costume in 1967 would have been 100% impossible. Stretch fabrics needed did not yet exist, nor did the ability to create such realism. The studio then reminded viewers that in 1967, Planet of the Apes was the best that could be done, and that the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot looks much more real. Film analysis done in the area comparing the flora and fauna indicates that the creature in the video was taller than any living man. This also invalidates the hypothesis of the creature being a man in a suit. Experts in human anatomy also throw, apparently I made an error in my editing, basically what I'm trying to say at this point is that they compared the stride of a person up to the image of the Sasquatch and showed that the placement of certain features in comparison with a human skeleton, the proportions were nowhere near that of a human being. Experts point out the muscle definition, the parting of the hair in specific expected places, such as around the spine and the buttocks. They also mention the flexing of the Achilles tendon as well as various muscle groups. And perhaps the most striking feature, and one very difficult to fake, are the prominent breasts, which move with each step. Now, you're probably wondering, and I've seen somebody question this, how I'm going to tie all this into Mormonism. Believe it or not, there are many ways in which the mystery of Bigfoot intersects with Mormonism. Since we're discussing evidence, we must talk about Dr. Jeff Meldrum. There have been a handful of scientists throughout the years who have risked their credibility to research and speak out on the Sasquatch phenomenon. Each of these scientists, in the course of their studies, came across evidence that was sufficiently compelling to cause them to admit that an honest inquiry was required. Such was the case with Dr. Jeff Meldrum. Dr. Meldrum was born in Salt Lake City and was educated at Brigham Young University. He is a professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho State University. He is a Latter-day Saint and also the world's living preeminent Sasquatch expert. He is the author of the Sasquatch Field Guide, as well as the book Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. He's featured on nearly every Bigfoot documentary of recent years, and he possesses the world's greatest collection of Bigfoot footprint castings. Dr. Meldrum expressed to me that he has had an interest in the Sasquatch phenomenon since he saw the Patterson-Gimlin footage in a theater as a child. Amongst his wide range of expertise, he is an expert in early hominid bipedalism. He was shown purported Sasquatch foot castings in the early 90s and quickly noticed characteristics in the footprints, which compelled him to commit to future study. Dr. Meldrum has drawn attention to many characteristics found in Sasquatch footprints, such as mid-tarsal breaks, which are large flex points in the midfoot region where the arch is found in the human foot. His argument is that this is an evolutionary trait consistent with heavy bipedal mammals. Dr. Meldrum has also worked with Jimmy Chilcutt, a latent fingerprint examiner highly regarded with the FBI, DEA, and both federal and state law enforcement. Chilcutt investigated Meldrum's collection of Sasquatch footprints. He became convinced of the validity of the existence of the creatures through complexities he noticed in the dermal ridge whorl patterns, which Chilcutt said were indicative of a new species existing in the Pacific Northwest. Along with the Mormon connection to Bigfoot and science, Bigfoot also occupies a place in Mormon folklore and history. In the teachings of early Mormonism, there was a Cain connection. Scripture speaks of Cain being marked to separate him from all other men and is being cursed to roam the earth. Matthew Bowman conveyed the following in his Mormon Bigfoot, David Patton's Cain and the Concept of Evil in Early Mormon Folklore. Quote, in the spring of 1835, Apostle David W. Patton claimed that he saw Cain. He was serving a mission in Tennessee and staying with the family of Abraham O. Smoot, a future state president and mayor of Salt Lake City and Provo. 3.5 years later, in October 1838, Patton was killed at the Battle of Crooked River in Missouri. A 1900 biography reprinted a letter sent from Smoot to Joseph F. Smith in 1893, reporting Patton's claim that while riding his mule back to Smoot's home, he, quote, met with a very remarkable personage who had represented himself as being Cain, who had murdered his brother Abel. Quote, I certainly noticed a strange personage walking beside me for about 2 miles. His head was about even with my shoulders as I sat in the saddle. He wore no clothing and was covered in hair. His skin was very dark. He said, that he had no home and that he was a wanderer in the earth. He said that he was a very miserable creature and that he sought death, but that he could not die and that his mission was to destroy the souls of men. I rebuked him in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by virtue of the holy priesthood and commanded him to go hence, and he immediately departed from my sight. End quote. I brought this account to the attention of Dr. Meldrum, who immediately began to laugh and shake his head as he was already familiar with it. I asked him, being a Latter-day Saint, if he believed that the creature was indeed Cain. He expressed his amusement in the tale, but again confirmed his understanding that the Sasquatch was not a solitary being and not Cain. Rather, they were a species of bipedal ape. Being that I had already breached the subject, I continued further and asked Dr. Meldrum if he had any difficulty reconciling the existence of Sasquatch with his Latter-day Saint faith. He expressed that he did not, and that truth found in science could always find a way to coexist with spiritual truth. It was also taught in early Mormonism that Cain's curse was equated with blackness and that black people were less valiant spirits in the pre-existence. Both this teaching and the Sasquatch folk belief have since been forgotten in the LDS church, with the Sasquatch story rarely being known even amongst fundamentalists. Many cultures attribute a spiritual significance to the creatures. The Yeti and the Yowie both hold spiritual significance in the Himalayan and Australian Aboriginal cultures. Throughout indigenous societies worldwide, animals often have spiritual significance. Their appearances are said to warn or empower those who encounter them. Amongst the people of the Bon Po, pre-Buddhist Himalayan folk tradition, the Yeti was a spiritual creature. Daniel Capper, PhD at the University of Mississippi, wrote an article in an attempt to elaborate. From it, I quote, "Most images of Yeti in popular culture and scholarly literature portray them as secular, predatory monsters. These representations overlook important religious dimensions of Yeti that are hidden in the current literature. So I take a new look at Yetis in Tibetan religions in order to clarify our understanding of these legendary creatures. Following a phenomenological approach that sets aside the issue on the ontological existence of Yetis, I examine text, art, ritual, and folklore in order to propose four Yeti personal ideal types: the Buddhist practitioner, the human religious ally, the friendly Yeti, and the mountain deity Yeti. These ideal types enhance earlier scholarship by demonstrating that Yetis may appear in friendly as well as dangerous guises. They may play religious roles even when they are not venerated and may embody luminosity even when they are most fearsome," end quote. The Aboriginals of Australia mention Yowies in association with their dream time, which, though a complicated idea, is, in a nutshell, a time where men dwelled in a more spiritual realm, often directly interacting with the gods and other spiritual entities. Various Native American tribes have had diverse relationships with the creatures. Some people viewed the Sasquatch as peaceful cousins who in the distant past traded with man and interacted with him. Other tribes viewed the creature in a more sinister light. A prime example, the Sonoqua, is depicted in many tribal masks of the Pacific Northwest. The defining feature is always a rounded mouth, which in the traditional dances is depicted as emitting a cooing sound. The Sonoqua was said to carry a basket on its back in which it carried away children to devour. The Paiute of Nevada have long carried on a legend about a war with cannibal giants, which the Paiute claim to have trapped in Lovelock Cave and burned to death. To this day, many Native cultures speak of contemporary experiences with the creatures. The Navajo people recently held a meeting to discuss the great number of sightings taking place in their nation. When I visited the Mescalero Apache I was told that they do not venture out into the mountains at night for fear of the Kinsa, or Bigfoots, that are there. The Bigfoot Field Research Organization website contains the following concerning the Mescalero Apache and their relationship to the Kinsa. Sorry, I'm realizing now that comments from the Whova app are popping up and they're not all directed to me, so the problems I thought I was having weren't even me. If you're speaking, make note that it may not be talking to you at the top of the comments. All right. The Bigfoot Field Research Organization website contains the following concerning the Mescalero Apache and their relationship to the Kinsa. Quote, several people on the Mescalero Indian Reservation told us they were raised with the understanding that one should not offend or defend against the Kinsa, Apache word for Bigfoots. There seems to be a culturally infused confidence that the Kinsa do not attack humans, or at least have never done so in their cultural memory. And their cultural memory extends back a long, long way. That gives them confidence about what to expect and what not to worry about. Many people we spoke with told us their parents and their grandparents said these creatures shouldn't be messed with, even if they occasionally scream near the house at night or pound on a wall or kill a barking dog. Younger family members were also told by their elders to never play in the woods after dark and not whistle in the woods at any time. I'm often asked whether or not I've had any personal experiences. My initial interest began around age 7. I grew up on a small farm in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains in West Georgia. Once, early in the morning, I was looking out the front door into the woods which surrounded our house, and I thought I saw a Bigfoot standing deep in those woods. I could make out its broad shoulders and the hair that covered it. I was both intrigued and absolutely terrified. Each morning, for a few days thereafter, I could see the creature standing in the same spot. Eventually, I became brave enough to throw my shotgun over my shoulder and go see for myself. I walked quietly through the woods using a quiet, stalking, heel-to-toe step until I got within 45 yards. I then shouldered my shotgun and proceeded. The creature never moved. As I moved into firing distance, my fear began to become curiosity, as I was very intrigued that the animal did not respond to my presence. A few steps further, and I realized the answer to my question. It was not a Sasquatch I was looking at, nor was it anything animal. A recent storm had snapped off a rotten pine at a height of about 8 feet, and the stump was tangled in moss. Even though I didn't get to see a Bigfoot that day, Bigfoot had made its entrance into my young mind. I mentioned earlier that Washington State is the site of many Sasquatch sightings. A map highlighting locations of encounters completely overshadows the state. On many of my trips to Washington, I've gone deep in the woods in areas that seem to be hotbeds of activity. On one such trip in Gold Bar, Washington, I walked a few miles down an old logging road deep into the moss-covered evergreens. It was silent and emerald green. Quite a ways into my silent walk, the silence was broken when a softball-sized rock landed in front of me on the overgrown path. I looked in the direction the rock came from and could barely make out a tall, upright shadow in the endless trees. Having grown up playing baseball, I picked up the rock and heaved it back. To my surprise, the shadow dropped to its belly and army crawled away, at which time I screamed like a child and ran away as fast as I could. Utah is also a hotbed of Sasquatch activity. YouTube is filled with videos and encounters from the Wasatch to the Uintas on down to Provo Canyon and to Scipio. My second experience was the week of Christmas 2 years ago. I'm a country singer, and I was hired to perform at Snow Basin in the mountains near Ogden. It was snowing very hard with limited visibility as I made my way up Highway 84 along the Weber River. Just before the Huntsville exit, the river briefly becomes visible. This spot by the railroad tracks is filled with fishermen when it's fair weather. But on this blizzard day, I could only see one large man. He was exceptionally large and appeared to be in all black. He stood knee-deep in the river and was looking into the water. He had no backpack, no fishing gear, and as I pulled off the exit, I realized there was no vehicle of any kind. Footprints came down the opposite side of the river, descending the mountain in this deep snow. On seeing this, it suddenly hit me that it might not be a man. I pulled over and ran towards the spot, but no one was there. I reported my sighting to the Rocky Mountain Sasquatch organization and was made aware of many local sightings. That would be a good point to let you know if you get on Facebook or YouTube. After this sighting, I started the Southern Utah Bigfoot Association. We don't have a ton of content up yet, but there is a Facebook and a YouTube, so check it out. In my travels as a musician, people often tell me about firsthand experiences and old family stories. Many are embarrassed and avoid sharing their accounts as they don't want their mental health called into question. On a few occasions, children have shared their tales with me in great detail. It seems they don't have the same fear of ridicule as adults. However, I can think of two examples where the children had seemed to bury the details as to what they had actually saw, much like a trauma survivor would do. It seemed in both cases that the kids had quickly convinced themselves it was something different to try to make sense of it in their minds. In both cases, further questioning and showing them Bigfoot photos caused both children to excitedly exclaim that that is exactly what they had saw. In my spare time, I often stay up late at night poring over the latest evidence. Many joke about the consistently blurry photos that are submitted as supposed Sasquatch. However, there is a fair amount of evidence, both photo and video, that modern technology is providing. Some of it is difficult to dismiss. There are YouTube channels where film experts scrutinize the evidence, and though on many occasions it appears to be cases of mistaken identity or even hoaxes, there is a fair amount of evidence that leaves the experts with no other explanation. Even famed naturalist David Attenborough said the following, quote, "I'm baffled by the abominable snowman." That's another name for Sasquatch. "Very convincing footprints have been found at 19,000 feet. No one does that for a joke," end quote. Jane Goodall, household name, famous for living with chimpanzees, has stated on more than one occasion that she believes the evidence supports the existence of Bigfoot. A common question that perhaps some Mormons can relate to is, what happens when belief is shattered? What happens when we can no longer covet the comfort of belief? On one of my recent late-night Sasquatch evidence searches on the internet, I found a mind-blowing documentary I'd never seen before. The documentary claimed to have been made by teenagers in New York. It featured the most believable and compelling footage I've ever seen. A Sasquatch leaping into a river and catching a fish in one hand. Sasquatch interacting with deer. The quality and clarity of the footage elevated me. It was an obscure video with only 1,000 or so views. I knew it had not yet been discovered by the Bigfoot community. I searched into the night, eventually finding footage of an interview with the boy's father. The man claimed he did not know that his son had shot the video and was just as amazed as anyone could be. I was floored. Finally, some new substantial evidence. For me, it was like a Mormon seeing footage of Joseph Smith's first vision. I shared the video with other researchers, many of which had never seen it and were equally as enamored. We were onto something huge. But by morning, it was all shattered. I searched out the father's name and eventually found that in real life, he was a famous artist, a painter, someone like Andy Warhol, who captured pop culture. On his Instagram, he had paintings of Mickey Mouse shooting heroin, psychedelic images of war and stardom, and deep into the thread of photos, I found them. The hyper-realistic Sasquatches from the video. But now, they were wearing Hawaiian shirts with ball caps on their heads and cameras on their necks like tourists. It was all art. I found an interview where he explained that he did it to confront the nature of belief. Mine was definitely confronted. A wave of emotions washed over me. Rage, confusion, the embarrassment of ignorance. It felt strangely familiar. It felt like that last week of my mission where the bubble popped in my mind and I was no longer sure if the church was true. I remember my 21-year-old self thinking, I know the church is true, or I knew it. Then I began to doubt. And then eventually I came to think that anything that claims to be the absolute truth surely cannot be. It's a painfully enlightening process. For years, I laughed at Mormonism and mocked it. Drunk in Salt Lake City bars, I did things that Brigham Young would have blood atoned me for. It took years before I began to think of Mormonism again. Sunstone helped me understand there truly is more than one way to Mormon. I actually drank a nice cold beer out of this Sunstone glass as I wrote my other talk on outer darkness. This year marks my fourth year being involved with Sunstone. I played music at my first Sunstone. Lindsay's had me as a guest on Year of Polygamy. And I started the Colorado City Music Festival and have met fundamentalists from so many branches of Mormonism I could barely keep track. I've written, I think, 6 or 7 lectures for the symposium. And I've met some of the most fascinating people and had my understanding and curiosity jump-started. I've been blessed by this experience. I've come to understand the destruction of our beliefs is a great gift. As soon as our beliefs are annihilated, we are free to enjoy a new perspective. We then truly have the hearts, eyes, and mind of a child and are free to be amazed. Am I still a Mormon? Yes, but maybe more. As a man in the Centennial Park polygamous community asked me, "Well, do you seek the truth?" I said, "I do." And he replied, "Well, then you're more Mormon than you think. Let the truth come from whence it may." I hope I've done a somewhat decent job at sharing evidence and Sasquatch apologetics, if you will. I know that Sasquatch is true, or at least the evidence is compelling enough to keep searching. I feel the same way about Mormonism. This has been Mormon Bigfoot, Something to Believe In. I'm Tom Bennett, and I thank you for listening. I'll take any questions you have and answer them to the best of my ability. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your Sunstone experience.
Thank you, Tom. I'll just scroll through the questions.
Okay.
The first one, so why Bigfoot? Is it because of the old teaching of Bigfoot being Cain, or is that just a coincidence?
I think that was one of the key points that tied it into Mormonism. You know, of course, the story of Mormonism and the story of Bigfoot independently are key stories in both the history of America and the American West. And if one dives deep enough into Mormonism and into the curious little anecdotes and folk history, you're eventually going to find that Cain story, which is a very interesting one. And I like following how that, it was never a doctrine. It was just a folk idea. It's interesting to see how it evolved over the years, eventually into Curse of Black Skin, and then to wherever it is currently in Mormonism. I hope that answers enough.
Thank you. The next one, this person asks, is it a subversion of one's integrity to continue to participate and accept callings when one is not an Orthodox, fully believing Mormon? What do you think?
To accept callings. So I guess in that sense, this person would still be active in the church. I think that would be something that each person would need to determine on their own. Me personally, if I was still active in the faith and was called to do something, I feel like I would give it my best effort. It's okay to doubt, and it's okay to not be 100% convinced of every aspect of Mormonism and still do your best at being a good Mormon. Like in my talk, I said at the end, I still consider myself Mormon, at least in many ways. I haven't been to a Mormon church in, I don't even know, over 10 years. But I still have a great collection of Mormon books that I read from periodically. And I would say there's probably not a day that goes by that I don't at least consider some aspect of Mormonism and still view it as a framework for my universal perspective. I get into that a little bit in my other talk tomorrow on outer darkness and eternal damnation. But I would say if you feel comfortable taking a calling, or even if you feel comfortable with the challenge of taking a calling, I would do it. And if you still are wondering, then I would say, employ that great Mormon right to pray about it and see what the Spirit tells you to do.
Thank you. The next question, in your opinion, is there evidence of Bigfoot which has been suppressed, or is that evidence yet to be collected?
That's a good question. When you engage with people in the Bigfoot community and you look at the evidence that is there, there's a lot of people that suggest that evidence has been suppressed for various reasons. This suppression, if it exists, is generally attributed to three sources. The first being the federal government, being that it might just change the opinion on certain issues. And I don't know really what issue the federal government would have with revealing it. Maybe it would change the way national parks are governed. Second source of possible suppression is the logging industry. There's a lot of people that talk about that. Obviously, if Sasquatch were proven to be in an area and that became public knowledge, it would probably quickly become unethical and possibly illegal to log in those areas. So they say there could be potential suppression of information from the logging industry. And the third source, which may not surprise you, it could be that religions themselves seek to suppress this information. For much the same reason, the theory of evolution for a long time was outright denied and taught to be the teaching of Satan. And then later, some religions implemented it, but with the influence of spirituality as it being perhaps a law of gods that we are now currently beginning to understand. So yes, there could be suppression of the evidence. There's evidence of that suppression of evidence.
Thank you. A different question. Do you believe the various Big Feet, Yeti, and so forth share a common language, or are they even lingual?
So there are various theories about what a Sasquatch is. Some people who study Sasquatch will claim that there are like even 8 to 10 different species of the creature. Dr. Jeff Meldrum, who I generally take as my most trusted resource in the field, believes that they are, he calls them the North American great ape, and that they are simply an upright walking elusive ape. And so apes are known to engage in various vocalizations. All kinds of apes do this. There is a piece of footage. If you were to Google Bigfoot Samurai Chatter, there was some footage taken in the late 70s. It's very rare footage. This hasn't been documented many times, where these Sasquatch hunters, squatchers, they call them, were out in the woods looking for evidence, and they didn't see anything, but they heard this samurai, like Asian sounding kind of chatter in the woods. And they were in the middle of nowhere and they filmed it and they attributed it to Sasquatch. And when that was analyzed by linguistic experts, it was determined to have certain markers that indicated it was indeed a language.
Thank you. Are Sasquatch antediluvians and therefore functionally immortal, living for thousands of years, or do they have life cycles similar to other hominids?
Well, that would depend on if Sasquatch is Kane or not. And I had an interesting, when I posted in the Sasquatch group that I'd be giving this talk, one man posted, he said, he argued that nothing pre-flood except for Noah and his family survived. So he believed that even Cain was killed off in the flood. Now that's an interesting point, because Mormonism says Cain would be cursed to walk the earth. I don't personally remember if that was to be until the coming of Christ, or perhaps he might've been taken out in the flood. So if Cain is Bigfoot and there's just the one, he could potentially still be walking according to Mormon theology. if more likely, according to Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and what I would personally think is more likely, the Sasquatch is a species of upright walking ape, then they probably didn't exist in the form they are now before the flood. What if they did, then maybe they were on the ark and survived it. I don't know. It's a good question. Fun to think about. Big butt on the ark.
It's quite an image.
Hey, Bigfoot, could you look over those clouds and see if you see land? We have a dog.
Someone's asking, do you ascribe to any conspiracy theories, flat earth, anti-vax, 9/11 kinds of topics?
I try not to dive into those things too much, just because I'm very careful about my, I guess my mental environment would be a phrase I could use. You know, right now we're dealing with so many things that I just don't tend to dive into it too deeply. Me personally, I have some very interesting views on health. I actually don't take, so I'm an ex-drug addict. I haven't touched any chemicals at all since 2008 when I cold turkey quit doing cocaine. And I was a very serious addict. And at that time, I cut out everything. And so I primarily treat any kind of potential sicknesses by ingesting cayenne pepper and other herbs. And I haven't been sick in 17 or 18 years, even a cold. So that being said, I personally don't get any vaccinations or anything like that. Flat Earth, I personally don't think the Earth is flat, just because of the shadow of the Earth on the moon. In this Earth, when bubbles form, they form round. Most of the evidence looks like other planets are round, but I admit there's a lot I don't know. 9/11. I don't trust the federal government at all. So I don't know. I don't think it could have been an inside job. What do they say? Jet fuel can't melt steel beams. Anyway, you could go down a rabbit hole with all that stuff.
You, during your talk, you mentioned Jeff Meldrum, and someone is wondering if you happen to know, is he from the same family as Rod Meldrum?
I don't know. So Jeff Meldrum was educated at BYU and currently lives in Idaho. But if I remember correctly, he told me he's originally from Oregon. And you know how Mormonism is. If somebody's got a last name that seems familiar, they're probably related somewhere down the line. But that's purely an assumption. I don't know. I do know that he's an extremely friendly individual. I've gone out to lunch with him a couple times and visited his lab. And I bet if you were to look him up and email him, he might let you know. He's a great, great guy.
Okay. The next question, Bigfoot, Yeti, are they like the three Nephites?
In the sense, I guess, in that they roam forever. If he is Cain, he could potentially, according to the doctrine, be similar to the Nephites in the sense of being, like he wouldn't be translated because he's not a holy being, but a being that has kind of had the evil equivalent of that. He exists in the flesh until he's released, I guess. And then as this account said, cursed to walk the earth, seeking to devour the souls of men. So in that respect, being immortal, I would say yes. But I personally don't subscribe to the belief that Cain is necessarily Bigfoot.
Okay. Someone has a statement, but maybe it's something you'd want to respond to.
Sure.
Whether Mormons, conspiracy theorists, or Bigfoot believers, I am skeptical of those who would be disappointed if their beliefs were not true, because it reveals a bias to something other than truth.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a astute comment. So Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, has this really great statement. In the beginner's mind are infinite possibilities, and in the master's mind there are few. And that is meant to speak well of the beginner, not the master. There's a great value in staying open-minded. That's why I said in this talk, how did I word it? It was something about how long will we covet the comfort of our beliefs. When you become sure of something, you can become stagnant in it. When I left the Mormon church, it would just quit attending. I come to a point where I was so sure that it was the complete and all encompassing truth and worldview that I couldn't see beyond it in any way at all. If somebody's lifestyle, beliefs, et cetera, didn't fall in line with the Mormon faith, then they were just simply wrong. And now I look at that and I think, how horrible. I remember, I have an aunt who's, very, very loved by myself. I love her. She was always good to me as a child. And when I was Mormon or active in the LDS church, I knew she was lesbian. And I sent her a letter on my mission calling her to repentance, because that was my understanding, that she needed to repent. Well, who am I? Who am I to call her to that repentance? I mean, it was the role of a missionary, I guess, but looking back, having my worldview limited in that way, I felt terrible about it. And I begged her forgiveness later, and she accepted my apology, and we're close again. And I'm grateful for that. So it's just best to stay open-minded. Let God be the judge.
Thank you. This question, perhaps I misunderstood something you were saying, or perhaps the questioner did. It says, you had mentioned in a comment, I think, how one believer in Bigfoot is a BYU professor at BYU, Idaho. Can you tell us more about his research or beliefs?
Yes, you're talking about Dr. Jeff Meldrum. So Dr. Jeff Meldrum, he's not at BYU, Idaho. He was educated at BYU in Provo. He is a doctor of anthropology with a emphasis in early hominid bipedalism, or the movement of animals from four legs to two legs in the evolutionary cycle. He's an active LDS person. I believe he's also given lectures on Book of Mormon evidences. But he is a professor of anthropology at Idaho State University in Pocatello, Idaho. He's been featured in every single Bigfoot video documentary in probably the last 20, 25 years, and he lectures around the world on the existence of Sasquatch using scientific evidence.
Thank you. This question asks, a lot of hunters set up remote cameras in the mountains to track game. Have any hunters submitted video or photo evidence of Bigfoot Sasquatch?
That's a good question. It would seem like that would naturally happen, and it has. There's been quite a few videos submitted, and again, some of them are very low quality, and they show things that are very curious. Some have been identified as bears, even though everyone looks at it and goes, bears don't move like that. They don't have arms that long. They have legs, and they don't use them as, to grasp things like that. There are some that are very clear and very shocking. If you were to get on YouTube and look up most compelling Bigfoot evidence, there's quite a few different videos of this footage. An interesting thing about that, though, is people often ask the accompanying question, why isn't there more footage, right? Because these game cameras pick up everything. They can shoot video, they can shoot pictures, and they work very, very well with excellent quality. And they also have great night vision now. Why don't we capture more Bigfoot evidence? So a really cool thing I saw, a man studying mountain gorillas did a study where he put game cameras amongst a group of mountain gorillas, chimpanzees, and orangutans. And then he documented how many captures he got on his cameras. And with the chimps, he got quite a few. They didn't seem very afraid of it. With the orangutans, he got some. But with the gorillas, he only got about two pictures, where the others, he got 80, 90 pictures. He only got two, but he had a motion sensor on the camera, and he found that multiple times the gorillas did touch the camera, but they did it without being caught on the camera.
Interesting. The next one is just a comment saying a voice of support from someone who has seen enough to know they are real.
And oh, well, share your story. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, they don't say it. More.
Okay, well, if you're listening still, whoever you are, mystery person, get in touch. I would love to hear.
We have about 5 more minutes and a couple questions.
Sure.
So much mythology around the globe interpreted as Squatch, Bigfoot, etc. Could they all just come from some reclusive and unkept dudes living in the mountains?
Yeah, they definitely could. I mean, there's been feral people reported up into the early to mid 19th century from around the world. And some of the sightings, people say, man, that looked really human to me. There was an article I read about some Bigfoot tracks were found in the Pacific Northwest and into British Columbia, but they weren't that big. And when Sasquatch experts looked at them, they said, these are not Bigfoot tracks. Bigfoot tracks have certain key markers that let us know that it's a Sasquatch track. These tracks that are found are human tracks. Where did you find them and what did you see? And these people say, way out in the woods on an extended camping elk hunting trip, I found these tracks. And I saw a long-haired, shaggy, hair-covered man-ape walking in the woods. And some of these experts have knowledge of certain Native American shaman and have gone to the local indigenous people and asked, and it has been revealed that even to this day, there are certain tribes of Native Americans that send out shamans to live in the woods completely feral and wild for numerous years to gain certain spiritual powers. On extremely rare occasions, that this could be what people are saying.
Interesting. Someone asked you to comment on reconciling belief in evolution with Mormonism.
Well, that's difficult. It is difficult to do. And I think it's been a long-standing question that all religions have faced. I don't know the answer. I will say this. Mormonism is a religion that believes in the evolution of the spirit. That's what initially drew me to it. It's a religion that teaches that we are gods in embryo, that we can become literally gods and goddesses, to live forever in the eternities with no end to our knowledge, dominion, glory, just as God. And that is a spiritual evolutionary state that takes place in each one of us. Physical evolution, it seems there is a great deal of evidence for it. One thing I do think about is it either is true and we evolved into what we are today, or there's also evidence that supports the theory that we have always been what we are as human beings, but that there were other beings that existed that were very like unto us that were considered animals. Even today, as I mentioned in my talk, we share a great deal of our DNA with the other great apes. And genetically, if you look at us, that is what we are. But clearly, we are different due to our intellectual capacities, the complexities of our languages and cultures. So it's a question that remains a mystery, but one that we should definitely continue to seek out truth on.
Thank you. There are maybe 2 minutes left and one more question just came in. Do Sasquatches reproduce? Do they live forever and thus are like no other similar species.
So again, going back to the Kane thing, if the one Sasquatch is actually Kane, I don't know if the scriptures ever said anything about him reproducing. I believe Kane had descendants. I haven't read that part of the Bible in a long time. He definitely has a physical body, if not a mortal body. So it would seem that he could potentially breed. I don't know who he'd be breeding with, unless others shared his curse. But I subscribe to the theory that the Sasquatch is an upright, walking, great ape. And that being the case, yes, they do breed. And there are evidences that the Sasquatches, like all other great apes, exist in family units with a male, multiple females, and their young, with the young eventually going off to create their own families.
Well, thank you. Our time is up, but I'd like to thank you all for attending and for supporting Sunstone.